Appreciate the opportunity to be here today and to have a share in this study. And the topic that was assigned to me is the effects of cell phones, computers, the internet, etc., on our children and the church at large. In Bible times, information only traveled as fast as men could carry it on foot or by an animal. In 2 Samuel 18, David is waiting for a report about the battle which involved his son Absalom, and his watchman tells him that there are men running toward them with news. In the New Testament era, letters were delivered, letters that were written by inspired men were delivered by messengers that hand carried them. In Philippians 2 and 25, Paul writes, "Yet I considered it necessary to send to you Epaphroditus, my brother, fellow worker, and fellow soldier, but your messenger, and the one who ministered to my need." In Colossians 4 and 7, Paul says that Tychicus is a beloved brother, faithful minister, and fellow servant in the Lord, and he will tell you all the news about me. Now, this mode of delivering letters, news, and information continued until about the mid-1800s, when the telegraph made electronic communication possible. But we have come a long, long way in a very short amount of time, and now we can communicate and get information in a variety of ways in just a matter of seconds. Cell phones have made it possible to carry on a conversation or send a short message basically from anywhere you are to anywhere in the world. Computers and the internet have opened the door for many modern conveniences. We can look up virtually anything we want online and receive in mere seconds a host of information on any given subject. Digital cameras and video can be taken, or digital pictures I should say, and video can be taken and shared with others around the globe in just minutes. Social networks such as Facebook have made it possible to stay up to date on all the latest goings-on in the lives of our family and friends and brethren around the world. There are Bible software programs that were mentioned earlier in Brett's talk that aid in studying and assembling a lesson. Some of our brethren and some congregations have put together websites that contain information about the church, articles, sermons, debates, out-of-print and hard-to-find books that can be read from your computer screen or even an internet-ready phone. You can shop online, you can play games online, you can check the weather online, you can see the news online, you can follow sports online, and you can even watch television online. In fact, many smartphones today can do all of these things as well from wherever you are, just about anywhere in the world. While this modern technology has enriched and simplified our lives in many ways, in many cases, it has complicated and cluttered our lives at the same time. Cell phones, computers, and the internet are tremendous tools that can help us in many ways, even in the Lord's work. But like many useful things, in the hands of the devil, they become a destructive weapon. In 1 Peter 5 and 8, Peter said, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour." Paul said in 2 Corinthians 2 and 11, "Lest Satan should take advantage of us, for we are not ignorant of his devices." Since these forms of modern technology provide many new and ever-unfolding avenues for sin, we must be aware of what the dangers are and how to protect ourselves and especially our young people from the terrible effects that these things can have. Bible principles need to be applied when using these things so as not to be ignorantly caught in the snare of the devil. Well, what are the effects and dangers of cell phones? You know, unfortunately, it's not uncommon these days to hear a cell phone ring during the assembly. By the time the person figures out that it's their phone and they get it turned off, everyone's distracted. So what's the solution to this? Well, obviously we need to turn it off or put it on silent mode. And it's kind of amazing to me that people would actually call us during the assembly. Most of the people we know and associate with are members of the church, and they ought to know where we are at that time, and yet sometimes our phone still rings during church. I have seen young people sitting in the back of the church building during the worship service, text messaging, and playing video games. This behavior obviously violates the command to fear and to respect God. In 1 Peter 2:17, Peter says, "Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, respect God, have a reverential fear for God," is the idea there. And he says, honor the king. God is to be reverenced in all that we do, especially in worship. And a Christian using a phone or a video game or some other device, and I need to say for unscriptural purposes, because, you know, we, in this age of technology, we can have a Bible program on our computer or on our phone or Bible verses and so on that we can look through, and I suppose that's all right. But using these things for some unscriptural purpose in the assembly is sinning. Children need to be taught to reverence God. Young folks should not have such devices in the assembly if they may be tempted to use them for unscriptural purposes. Well, text messaging is a popular method of communication, especially with young people, but there are dangers with this as well. In many states, California is one of them, text messaging while driving is illegal. And I know that some of our young people do that. I mean, I know people have been in the car and they've sent me a text message, and I'll text them back and say, "What are you doing? I'm driving somewhere." "And you're text messaging?" Well, Christians are to obey the laws of the land where they don't contradict God's laws, Romans 13:1-7 and Acts 5:29. But what's even worse is the potential to seriously hurt or kill themselves or others due to being distracted while driving. Pull over, make a call with a hands-free device, or wait. No message could be so important that you risk your life or the lives of others to send it. Well, another sinful and very dangerous practice that young people can become involved in is sending immodest or explicit pictures of themselves or others via the cell phone through text messages. First of all, this is obviously sinful. It constitutes lasciviousness, which is a work of the flesh and condemned. Galatians 5:19-21. There's a list of several things that are sinful, and lasciviousness, or lewdness in the New King James Version, is one of them. And Paul says, those that practice such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. But that's not all. I've read of individuals who face serious criminal charges for child pornography for partaking in such activities with adolescents. Now, just imagine if someone comes and knocks on your door, the police come and knock on your door, the FBI comes and knocks on your door because you have participated in this or your children have participated in this. Imagine being arrested. Imagine the damage that would be done having your picture in the paper as being arrested for such a thing. Well, another danger of this practice is that these pictures can be posted on the internet for anyone to see. I read in the newspaper lately where some young persons who received such pictures were using them for the purpose of extortion. They were demanding money or more pictures or worse things that I won't mention from the pulpit here unless their demands were met. They would threaten to post those pictures unless their demands were met. Well, parents need to warn their children of the dangers of such things, and young people need to think about the horrible consequences of partaking in these things. Don't do it. Don't do it. Besides the temporal and emotional pain that these things will cause, these things place their souls in a lost condition. And even though they may repent and get forgiveness for these sins, their reputation and that of the church could bear the consequences for years to come. The cell phone is a very useful tool, but we must be careful how we use them and what we use them for, always making sure that we don't violate Bible principles. Now, most cell phones today allow access to the internet, which opens the door for more dangerous and sinful practices, but these we'll discuss in a little while when we talk about computers and the internet. Well, what about the effects of video games? You know, video games are very popular these days, and there are a multitude of video games that can be played on a handheld device or played on your television or the computer or a smartphone, and you can play some of these online. And some of these are harmless fun, some are educational, and even some of them promote good health through exercise. But many video games contain violence and filthy language and intimate content and occult themes. And the Christian should have no part in these types of games. Some video games place the participant in a three-dimensional virtual world. And these allow a person to create a new identity for themselves, so to speak, where they interact with others, generally through animation. And there might be some parts of this that's okay, but they also open the door for a person to participate in all sorts of immorality. And even though it's virtual immorality, it's still immorality. Inappropriate video games must be avoided to keep us pure. They are an unwholesome influence for Christians, and especially for our children. We need to do as David pledged to do in Psalm 101, verse 3. He says, I will set nothing wicked before my eyes. And a lot of the video games that are out there have content in them that are wicked. Research needs to be done before buying or playing these games to make sure that they are appropriate. Generally speaking, if you go down to the store and buy a video game, it doesn't tell you much about what's in it or even how to play it. You just kind of have to learn as you go. And unfortunately, you may get to a certain level of this and find out that there's things in there that are wrong. So do some research online. There are websites that you can go to find out what is in these games and whether or not they would be appropriate. Well, what about the effects of television and movies? You know, television and movies and the internet are rapidly coming together into one. You can watch television on your computer now, and you can actually buy a TV now that comes with a keyboard, and you can do the internet on your television. And it's getting to smartphones, same thing. You can watch television on your smartphone, and there's such a thing as a sling box, I think, is one of the manufacturers that makes a device to where you can connect your smartphone or your computer with your cable TV system or dish, and you can watch television wherever you go. So I thought I'd include this here. Actually, it was one of the things that Alan mentioned in the beginning when he gave me the topic. Well, while it's true that television has helped in the conversion of many to New Testament Christianity, and while it is true that there are still some good shows on TV, and while it is true that there are still some wholesome movies out there that we can watch, by and large, the moral standards of television are declining. There's more filthy and suggestive language in television these days. There's more immodesty. In fact, you might even call it pornography. There's more and longer suggestive intimate scenes. There's more violence, and the violence is becoming more graphic. There's a lack of respect for parents and authority displayed on TV. Crime, drugs, fornication, adultery, homosexuality, and just about every other kind of ungodly and immoral behavior that you can think of is glorified and portrayed as commonplace and acceptable on the television. Well, Christians, and especially impressionable children and young people, should avoid watching such unholy programming. In Romans 12 and 9, Paul said, abhor what is evil and cling to what is good. Hate, despise what is evil. We shouldn't be drawn to it. We shouldn't want to watch these things. We should hate these things and despise these things and have nothing to do with them and cling to what is good. One of the problems with watching such unholy programming is that we become desensitized. Little by little, a person will become desensitized by watching this stuff. Pretty soon, a person will start to think, well, this stuff really doesn't seem all that bad. We kind of get used to it. It leads to tolerance and acceptance and possibly even practicing what we see on the television. Television has helped to bring the world into the lives of Christians. What is allowed to reside in the heart can and does come out in the form of actions. Jesus said in Matthew 15 and 19, for out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, and blasphemies. That's a lot of the stuff that's on television today. And if we allow that to fill our heart or even to take place in our heart or allow any of it in our heart, it's liable to come out in our action. Paul gives sound admonition to guard against this in Romans 12 and 2. He says, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Don't be conformed by the world. Don't let the external forces of this world conform you, shape you, mold you. Be transformed, be changed from the inside out by the renewing of your mind. We need to fill our hearts with good things, with the Word of God. So that's what shapes our thinking and our actions, not things from the outside coming in to shape our lives. When one fills their mind with the Word of God and thinks on good things, things that God approves of, those are going to be the things that that person does. In Philippians 4, 8, 9, Paul said, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. Those are the things that we need to be taking in and thinking on. He says, those things which you have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do, and the God of peace shall be with you. The heart must be kept pure. Jesus said in Matthew 5 and 8, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. The way to keep the heart pure is to fill it up with what is good. And if we fill our heart with what is good, there's no room for anything unholy and impure that can produce sinful behavior. Now, I'm not saying that we need to take the television and get rid of it, that we need to never watch any movies, that we need to never do any of that stuff. That's okay if you decide to do that. I'm not saying that's what you need to do. But what I am saying is it's not getting any better. And we need to be very, very, very careful of what we watch, and we need to be very, very, very careful of what we let our children watch. Well, what about the effects of computers and smartphones and the internet? Well, there is a very popular thing out there these days on the internet, and this is social networks. Facebook and other sites like this are a very popular attraction of the internet these days, even among Christians and especially among our young people. I'm just going to give you a few of the latest statistics from the Facebook website, and I thought this was kind of amazing. When you hear these, maybe you'll think so too if you didn't already know these things. There are over 500 million active users of Facebook alone. Just Facebook. And there's over 100 such sites. Now, there's not that many of them that are real popular, but there's a lot of them, and there's over 500 million active users. That's what, 1/12 of the world's population, and I'm sure the whole world doesn't have the internet and a computer, so it really narrows it down some. There are over 900 million objects that people interact with on Facebook. There are more than 30 billion pieces of content that are shared each month. Now, you reckon in all that stuff, there's some things there that might be harmful for us? Sure there is. Facebook users spend over 700 billion minutes on Facebook each month. So we can see how popular this site and other sites like it are. Facebook and such sites are an avenue for persons to set up a web page for the purpose of sharing information about themselves and others with other people that have pages within the site's network. This information is shared in the form of pictures and video and messages, posts, if you will. One decides just who sees and what is seen by choosing who to have as a friend and setting up certain privacy settings. One can also communicate directly with another person through a chat feature. Well, while these are a wonderful way to keep in contact with friends and family and brethren, through sharing with them what we're doing through pictures and messages, there are also dangers and the potential for sinful practices with these that must be avoided. Now, keep in mind, some of the things that I say are not necessarily apply to Facebook. A lot of this applies to the internet in general as well. Well, first of all, these things have created a forum for false teachers. In Titus 1:1, there Paul speaks of stopping the mouth of the false teacher. Unfortunately, the internet has made this command difficult. Men who we would never allow to stand in our pulpits and preach now are reaching our people through Facebook and other such sites and through the internet. Unsuspecting church members are exposed to their teaching, not knowing just who these men are and the damage that they have done and continue to do with their false doctrine. They appear to be among us, but they're really on the devil's side. These men should be identified and denounced and their false teaching exposed and avoided. In Romans 16, 17, and 18, Paul says, "Now I urge you, brethren, note those who cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which you have learned, and avoid them. For those who are such do not serve our Lord Jesus Christ, but their own belly, and by smooth words and flattering speech deceive the hearts of the simple." Another problem we have on such sites is that women are teaching publicly. Unknowingly, maybe, but I believe there are still women teaching publicly on these sites. Sometimes women answer Bible questions or post some form of teaching on these sites where it's available for public viewing. I believe this is unscriptural. The Bible prohibits a woman from teaching in a public capacity. 1 Timothy 2, 11 and 12 says, "Let a woman learn in silence with all submission, and I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over the man, but to be in silence. The woman may, however, teach to a small group under the authority of her father or husband in a private situation." 1 Timothy 2, 11 and 12, I believe, is qualified by Acts 18:26 and Acts 21:7-9. Our sisters need to make sure that whatever Bible discussions they have or postings they make are limited to what is consistent with the pattern that we find in the New Testament. Well, another problem that we know of on such sites are careless posting of inappropriate material. I've heard of Christians posting immodest pictures and video, links to other websites which contain offensive material, messages and pictures that portray sinful behavior that they partook in. Now, it's bad enough that they're partaking in this stuff, but to put it on their site so other people can see that they're doing these things? What kind of an influence do these things have on others? on immature Christians or new converts who are trying to overcome the world? What kind of an influence are those things going to have on them? What about those that are on the outside? What are they going to think when they see Christians participating in things that are shameful and sinful? In Matthew 5 and 16, Jesus said, "Let your light so shine so that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." These sorts of things do not do that. They are sinful. They don't glorify our Father in heaven. They bring shame and reproach upon the church and place a stumbling block before others. Another thing to consider before you post something is remember that employers and colleges are looking at these things. You know, you might send a resume in to a potential employer, and they'll find out you have one of these sites, and they can see what you're doing. And so we need to be very careful with what we post on these things. Well, another problem is that the internet has provided a new avenue for gossip. It is possible to tear someone down and spread rumors to a far greater audience with these, particularly with these social networks, than they've had before. Christians must be careful about what they post about others. Before posting something about another person, ask. First of all, is what I'm posting about this person accurate? And is it necessary and beneficial for who's going to see it and for the person you're posting it about? Or am I just posting this for my own benefit, to build myself up at their expense? Whispers and backbiters are condemned in Romans 1, 29 through 32. Remember, once you post something or once you click send, that message or picture or whatever is no longer in your control. Even if you send it privately, it's no longer in your control. And who knows how far it will spread and what kind of damage it will do. In James 3 and 5, there James says, "See how great a forest a little fire kindles." And I'm telling you, one little post can create great problems. So think very carefully about what we post and what we send over the internet. Well, another problem is one-on-one communication. Social networks, as well as other online chat rooms and instant messenger sites, provide the opportunity to communicate with a person or persons privately over the internet, and there are dangers in this as well. Young people may be less inhibited in front of a computer screen than they would be face-to-face or even on the telephone. This may embolden them to engage in immoral or suggestive speech. Colossians 3 and 8 says that we're to put away filthy language, and that's the kind of thing it's talking about there. Men and women can and do, married I should say, men and women, can and do become attracted to others online. They get acquainted by chatting, and before long, they become romantically involved. Christians are not immune from this. Christians need to avoid these avenues for sin. Joseph literally ran out of his coat when Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him, and we need to flee from such temptations that the internet presents. Paul told Timothy to flee youthful lusts in 2 Timothy 2 and 22. Well, a safeguard against some of the problems of social network sites is accountability. The computer needs to be kept in a conspicuous place. If you've got young people in your home that are using the computer, keep it in a conspicuous place. Don't have it in a corner somewhere. Keep it out where it can be seen. Parents should have full access to their children's account. Make them your friend. Give them your password and all the things that are needed to access all parts of the site. Perhaps, in some cases, spouses should have full access to each other's account. Just knowing that someone else can see what you're doing on there might be what it takes to keep a person from doing something they shouldn't online. Well, another danger with these sites, and maybe not so much from a spiritual angle, but I thought I'd mention this because it's out there, is online predators. One of the grave dangers of the internet, especially to our young people, is that of the online predator. It's not uncommon for people to mask their identity on the internet and on these sites. It is possible for someone to set up a false profile and even claim to be a church member somewhere with mutual friends, and your children, or maybe even you, will make them your friend. Verify who you add as a friend before you add them. Check with a congregation in the area that they claim to be from and find out if this person actually exists and is a member of the church before you just add them on there. Sometimes Christians have friends that are not members of the church, and while these friends may be okay, they may have friends that are not okay. And maybe one of these friends of your friends is an online predator. And they can have access to some of your information and photos. And these people, from what I've read, they will look for clues to find out where you live and where you go to school and where you work. So don't post messages or pictures that give that kind of information away. The people that you know, by and large, they, at least not for everyone to see, don't post that kind of stuff. The people that you know, by and large, they know where you go to school, they know where you work, they know those things. Don't give that kind of information out there for just anyone to see. Make sure that the security settings are such that those who are outside of your circle of friends can only see the minimum, and make sure what they can see doesn't include information that would give away where you work or where you live or where you hang out, that sort of thing. Also, chatting online with a stranger is very dangerous, and these predators will try to lure their victims into a face-to-face meeting, and I don't recommend chatting. Our parents warned us not to talk to strangers, and I think the same admonition goes for the internet as well. Another problem that the internet has presented for us in sites like this is cyberbullying. Now, there are people in this world who will insult and harass and threaten others by posting messages and perhaps photos of them with the intention of harming them. And this is just an electronic version of the old-fashioned schoolyard bully. Obviously, serious mental and emotional damage can result from this, and there are some who have been bullied in cyberspace who have even committed suicide. Our children need to be taught, number one, to avoid becoming involved in such things, and to come to us if any of this sort of thing starts to happen to them. Well, the internet in general, I suppose, has become a problem for some things, and one of those is pornography. Pornography is nothing new, but thanks to the internet, now it can be accessed easily and anonymously. Pornography is sinful, it's a form of lasciviousness, and it's a worldly lust. Galatians 5 and 19, as we mentioned earlier, condemns lasciviousness. It's a work of the flesh. It will keep one out of the kingdom of heaven. In Titus 2 and 12, Paul says, teaching us that denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, pornography fits into that category. We should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present age. Steps must be taken to protect our children from online pornography. And you know, they might not be looking for it. Hopefully they're not. But it's so prevalent on the internet that a couple of wrong clicks from an innocent site, and you might see something that you don't want to see, or you don't want them seeing. So we need to be very careful with that. There are internet filters that are an effective tool that block access to sites with pornography. Keeping the computer in a conspicuous place, as we mentioned earlier, that will help. With younger kids, parents should go online with them just to make sure that they don't click the wrong spot and end up seeing something accidentally that you don't want them to see. And for those who are tempted to view pornography, do what Job did. Job said, I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a young woman? Job 31 and 1. Perhaps we need an accountability partner, someone who can help us, someone who we might be able to call if we're tempted to participate in such things. If need be, maybe we need to get rid of the internet altogether. Now that sounds kind of dramatic in this day and age where it's such a valuable tool to us, but maybe we need to get rid of it altogether. We need to do whatever it takes. It'll be worth it. Jesus said, if your right eye caused you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. For it is more profitable for you that one of your members perish than your whole body be cast into hell. Sometimes drastic measures need to be taken to prevent falling into sin. Gambling is another sinful practice that is readily available online. Besides being highly addictive, gambling violates the commands against covetousness. Ephesians 5 and 3, it says, but fornication, all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as is fitting for saints. It violates the command against stealing. While gambling is consensual stealing, it's still stealing. Ephesians 4 and 28 says, let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands, what is good, that he may have something to give to him who has need. Gambling also violates the principle of honest labor for one's reward. 2 Thessalonians 3, 10 through 12. It doesn't matter if you're in a casino or in a card room or buying a lottery ticket somewhere, whatever the case is, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're sitting in front of a computer screen. Gambling is sinful and the Christian must avoid it. Another phenomenon, I guess you might call it, syndrome or effect of the internet is called online disinhibition. And that's the ability to be, the ability to be somewhat anonymous on the internet has emboldened some to do things that they would not normally do. We've kind of alluded to this earlier, but we'll talk about it a little bit more. Some individuals develop an attitude of unaccountability because they think, well, no one knows who I am. No one can see me. No one's going to find out what I'm doing. I can get away with this stuff. But if nothing else, Christians need to remember that God sees everything. He sees everything we do. In Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 13, there the writer says, and there is no creature hidden from his sight, but all things are naked and open to the eyes of him with whom we must give account. If you go over and look at Psalm 139, 1 through 4, there's some passages there that just point out very plainly that God knows everything. He sees everything. He knows our very thoughts and intentions and everything. So while we might sit in front of a computer screen and think nobody's watching, well, God's watching. Besides that, there are steps that parents can take to view everything their children are doing online. The internet has emboldened some to say things about others more freely, maybe to others and about others more freely on the internet. Things that folks would not say in person, they wouldn't dare to do that. But those things get easier on the phone and they get even easier on the computer. And most of the time, that's detrimental. Well, another danger here is that much of what we say is conveyed by our tone and our posture and our gestures and our facial expressions. Now, you can't communicate that kind of stuff when you're typing an email, or for the most part, unless you're more explanatory about those things or use little characters to show that you're happy or you're sad, something like that. Maybe we need a little parentheses and a colon or something to let them know it's a happy communication. In-person communication is much less likely to be misunderstood, but the odds of misunderstanding increase greatly on the phone and even much more through a typed message. Care must be used when communicating online so that we are not misunderstood. Well, there are some negatives that apply to all of this modern technology that we've talked about. And one of those is that most of these things, or all of these things, I should say, are addictive or can be addictive. Cell phones, video games, and the internet are all addictive. Just fishing around at various websites that talked about addiction, most of them reported about 10% of internet users are addicted. They've got to be on there all the time, it seems like, and they're always thinking about it, and that becomes what they spend most of their time doing. And some of the warning signs are that they begin to spend an exorbitant amount of time on these things. They have difficulty stopping, and when somebody mentions it to them, they get rather upset about that. It affects their sleep. It affects their work. It affects their job performance. It affects their family interaction, and it affects their attitude. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 6 and 12, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. All things are lawful to me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. And in 1 Corinthians 9 and 25, Paul says, everyone who competes for the prize is temperate. Self-controlled is the idea there, I believe. So we need to be self-controlled with these things and not allow them to become an addiction. Well, whether or not one is addicted, many hours can be spent on these things that are not as profitable as other things that we could be doing. Christians need to ask, are these things coming before spiritual things? Is my prayer life suffering? Are these things replacing Bible reading and Bible study? We need to monitor our children's use of these things as well. Are they doing their homework? Are they staying up late playing games and surfing the web, losing sleep, which affects their work and their attitude? Is their prayer life suffering and their Bible reading and Bible study time being affected? We need to be good stewards of the time that God has given us. In Ephesians 5 and 16, Paul said, redeeming the time because the days are evil. That means make the best use of our time. And if we're spending too much time on the internet and it's getting in the way of other things that are more important, we're not making the best use of our time. Unfortunately, modern technology robs many folks of precious time that they could be spending in much more beneficial ways. Another problem is that such things can interfere with family time. Family interaction suffers because of this technology sometimes. We've probably all been at a family gathering, and you know, everybody gets gathered up there and sits down in the living room, and two-thirds of the people there are pulling out their phones, and they're, you know, they've got their nose in there looking at something, or they're texting away. Sometimes they're texting people in the same room. That might be family interaction, I don't know, but I just hope it's not coming to that completely anyway. Well, there's a time and a place for this stuff, but it should not interfere with our family time and our family interaction. Well, in conclusion, what can we do to protect our young people and ourselves from the dangers of this modern technology? Number one, we need to be informed. We need to learn what these things will do. We need to learn what their dangers are. We need to do some research. And I think one of the problems here is that some of us with teenagers and younger kids, you know, we weren't raised in the age where we went to school with the computer and we, you know, cell phones and that kind of stuff. It's fairly new for us. And, you know, we really haven't learned a lot of that stuff and how it works. And maybe we just think everything's okay and we bury our heads in the sand, and there's a lot of danger out there. So we need to be aware of how these things work and what the dangers are. There are books you can buy, although, you know, it seems like you buy a book on the subject and in a year it's already out of date. So, you know, you can go to sites online as well, and those are probably more current. And you can learn how some of this stuff works and what some of the dangers are. Number two, we need to know what our kids are doing. We need to monitor their use of these things. And there are steps that, as parents, we can take that will allow us to see everything that they have done online. And just like I said earlier, just some accountability there, knowing that there's some accountability there, might protect them when they're tempted to do or see something on there that they should not. Go online with younger children. Make sure that you have access and look for anything that's suspicious. Number three, we need to protect them. keep the computer in a high traffic area, somewhere where it's in plain sight. We need to use filters and block access to undesirable sites. We need to limit the use of these things to prevent addiction. We need to make rules and deny access if they are broken, and we need to teach them of the dangers. Draw up a contract with your children and state what you desire of them, and then if they fail to meet that, take the privilege away. Well, there are many beneficial things that we can do with this modern technology, but there are many pitfalls as well with them, and this stuff appears to be here to stay, so we need to be informed, take the appropriate steps to protect our children and ourselves. Bible principles must be learned and taught and applied when using these things, so as to avoid falling into sin. I'm through.